Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Well, I never.
Indeed.
Oh, wait, I was supposed to say who.
No, you've messed it now.
I've done it.
It's
up
done.
Now.
You've done. How's it going?
Very good, thank you.
No Matt Knight this evening. He
who?
Is off. He's on some sort of birthday.
Guys, he should have done.
Birthday jolly.
Is he?
Yeah, it's his birthday in a couple of days.
We did actually agree with him that we'd do this podcast tomorrow with him.
I completely
and then
forgot about
last
that.
Minute all decided to naff him off.
Did we agree that?
We did.
Yeah,
we all had a
so.
Chat.
We definitely
right.
had a chat. I think we all forgot.
Yeah.
Maybe this is him being secretly sacked.
Mm.
Mm. Matt and I will never be sacked from this podcast.
Well, because
unless he says all those things on the microphone that he says in private that are problematic.
What, like, I don't really like pedals?
Yeah, exactly that. Then he's off. He's booted off.
Hugely but problematic.
Let's hope no one ever hears that. So it's been pretty nam-tastic the last few weeks, hasn't it?
I feel nammed out.
I feel a bit nammed out.
Well, I don't actually. I would never be not in a mood for new gear. If anything, now I'm sort of like a bit, because now we've got what we've got and we've got to wait until Messer now.
Music Messer. When's that? April?
Yeah.
Something
April
like that.
20 something.
Okay.
I bought some new gear this week. I haven't told you this yet.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, this is actually genuine. Like, this isn't me pretending like we don't know about
what each other do.
I genuinely don't know.
Speaking of new gear, I actually I went and picked up the 3 Roland Boutique synths yesterday.
You actually got
yeah,
them?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Wow.
I already got them all. I didn't have very much time yesterday, so I didn't. I only managed to get one of them out of the box.
Which one did you go for?
The GX01.
Oh, yeah. Classic.
And, I mean
they're all brilliant.
You know that meme of the dog that is, like,
holding the phone?
Holding the chemistry thing.
Yes, oh, this is dog?
No, that's the one holding the phone. No, the one with the dog by the chemistry set.
I have no idea what I'm doing.
That's exactly how I felt when I unplugged. And, like, I just was, like, pushing buttons and making cool sounds and, like, my girlfriend, bless her, was like just sort of looking on with like
human.
Look, yeah, very much human. Looking on as
did you just get one keyboard?
I didn't get any keyboard.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Wait, how do you use them? No, you can use them now. You don't have to use them. They work as synths as well as keyboard synths. Let's not forget, synthesizers didn't. Like, a keyboard is an additional attachment to a synthesizer.
Oh, okay, fine. Okay. So
and
you can
just speed it up and slow it down, and you can.
A synth purist would be furious at you for thinking that a keyboard was
part of parcel. I know that exists, but I didn't realize that these worked without.
Right.
Yeah, because the. So the keyboard actually comes as a. As an optional extra.
Yeah, I knew that.
So, yeah, you can. You don't have to get it, and you can clip them in and out. And actually, the reason that I didn't get the keyboard is because I think I'm going to get, speaking of NAMM, I think I'm going to buy one of the new ones.
Right.
Which I can't remember the name of.
Yeah, they come as a package.
They only come with the, you can only get those with, you can't get them separately.
Bit of a weird decision, that.
I'm
a little bit weird to, because if you
introduce it as modules and then sort
and then
of,
do a package deal.
They probably got loads of keyboards.
You've got to remember, no one's got the boutiques, like, they made such a finite number, and they were all sold out more or less.
Yeah,
like,
but
I'm surprised you could still even get some.
Well,
I'd
had them on hold until I had a bit of money.
What I'm saying is, it's weird though, because most people who will have bought the boutique series will have bought one of the little keyboards. I think Jay's probably an outlier here.
Mm.
Well, yeah, I mean, had I
no, that's a
so
point.
Then you're gonna,
had
I not
you're gonna,
known,
if you want to buy the fourth module, you're then
have
lumbered
keyboard.
With two keyboards.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
Roland logic there.
Yeah, well, I mean, presumably. So many people, they probably produced enough keyboard, maybe not enough keyboards per synth, because they did 750 of each synth. Mm. So, you know, that's what, 2,250, I think. Is that what?
Something like that.
Yeah, 2,250, I think. So maybe they made that many keyboards, and then people have gone like, well, I mean, you only need one if you've got all three. So they've probably got loads of keyboards left behind, so
maybe.
They just made them compulsory for the new one, which I can't remember the name of, but it's so wild.
A really cool and really affordable kind of little fun synth tool, which I think does like transcend into cool for guitarists to get as well. A fun thing to mess around on and to introduce into your set if you want. It would be something that we'd recommend to listeners, I guess, to go out and get if you could get them, but you can't because there are such a finite number.
I think,
but
I think
there is this new one
left. Yeah,
there is this new one as well, which is not, because the idea, if you're not familiar with the boutiques, the idea of the three boutiques they did were the JX, the
JP, which is the Jupiter.
Yeah,
and
that's
then the
right.
JU, which is the Juno.
The Juno. Yeah. So, and the JX is the...
I can't remember what it's called.
I'm not sure the actual thing. But they're all essentially pint-sized reissues of, you know, famous, legendary Roland synths.
But you can actually... you don't have to plug the mini keyboard in. You could plug a full, like, 61-key keyboard.
Via USB or MIDI?
I think via MIDI.
Okay.
I only know this because I watched a video that GAC did when they were first announced.
Really?
With... that band, the
Beatles.
The Beatles, no, Beach Boys.
Rolling Stones.
The Beach Boys did it, I think. No, what's that band who from Brighton? The electronica band.
AKDK.
Fatboy Slim.
No, no.
Not the, AKDK.
No. Like a big band.
Soccer 96.
Yeah, I think it's them. Yeah, FIFA 98.
FIFA Soccer 96.
There was GAC did a video. Of them, and it's really impressive, and they look amazing, and that was kind of what sold it to me.
Wait, I do know. Freemasons.
The Freemasons, that's the one. That's who I'm thinking of. And yeah, they. I think it's via MIDI that you can plug in like a 61 controller, and you just have a full like Jupiter.
I think they're really cool.
It's pretty mad.
Yeah, a really cool piece of gear. I think definitely like a cool addition for anyone to get, like, considering they're what, 250 quid.
I think the Jupiter, I mean, I got them all as one. I can't remember what the price breakdown was, but the Jupiter I think is 299 and the others are 249 or something like that.
Are they all gone?
I think there may be a handful
you
left.
Might be able to turn them on down.
I think, but yeah, I mean, really, really cool. I'm really looking forward to like properly spending some time with them, and by properly spending some time with them, what I mean is just putting them on a loop and putting them through the Space Echo, and then just like doing the washing up, you know.
Nice.
I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to do with them, but I've got I'm doing two band practices this week with two different bands.
Crazy.
Both playing guitar or bass?
I'm playing bass in one and doing vocals in the other. So I think I'm going to try and get a bit weird with one of them.
The vocals.
Not that one, probably the other one. That one probably be
what,
a bit more straightforward.
Like effects pedals and stuff on bass?
No, definitely not. Like maybe just like loop a synth line.
Oh, I see what you mean. You're going to take the synth
to
the band
practice.
Yeah,
sorry, that's what I meant, yeah.
Ah, okay.
So,
that does sound weird.
Yeah. I don't know, we'll see. It's with Dan Grace, who's done a couple of videos for Guitar Nerds. Great guitarist. And
good old boy, all
proper,
round.
Proper good old boy. So,
Joe Random, what you been up to?
Well, I've been trying to buy a keyboard actually as well. I can't work out which one. I actually need advice.
Well, you've come to the right place.
Exactly the wrong place.
Sorry. No, I need... our drummer's going to start using a Mellotron-style sound. He needs like...
Your drummer?
Is going to also play keyboard at the same time. Have you never seen Bosnian Rainbows?
No, unsurprisingly not. We've talked so many times on here how I think all of your music is guff.
Dean Anthony Parks, their drummer.
Of course.
DAP.
He has, instead of having any rack toms, he has a synthesizer there.
Okay.
You don't need any rack toms. Yeah.
You people. But yeah, so we're trying to get one of those. I'm thinking about getting a Yamaha Reface, one of the organs.
They look quite good.
They're pretty cool. Might get one of those.
Get a Korg MS-20. Yeah. Get two Korg MS-20s.
Micro Korg.
Could do. Other than that, I've been checking out the Swan Flight sale that's going on.
What?
It will still be going on because I believe they said it's a 10-day sale. So by the time this goes out, there'll still be a few days left on it. So definitely, listeners, go and check it out on eBay. Swan Flight are doing a some sort of New Year
sale.
I think they're all right, but they're basically getting rid of a load of stuff super cheap.
I imagine they either make stuff for tours that the tour fee probably pays for it, and get it back because people don't want to fly out of the country with it, so then they can just sell it on eBay. Or I'd imagine they make a load of stuff for people who just never pay the balance.
Yeah. Well, they did this weird thing recently where they made furniture out of flight cases. It's like armchairs that are completely flight case, but then just have a cushion, you know, in the middle.
Horrendous.
But the arms are just flight case, so like they're just like black, you know, with sort of the metal ends and the corners of the big bulbous.
It sounds like something like out of Zoolander.
It's just awful, and it's like 500 quid for a chair.
Yeah. Does, can you pack it down and take it safely on an EasyJet flight, though?
But I did notice on the bidding on the sale, one was up at around 50 quid.
So. For one of the chairs. Yeah. Amazing.
But you know, the prices are crazy on them. My girlfriend managed to get a couple of flight cases for her keyboards for like 20 quid for a sort of full, for a 69 key keyboard. Is it 69?
61.
61 key keyboard.
69 on the mind.
Yeah. Yeah, all the time. and also they're doing their full range of effect pedal boards, which is quite cool. That's the thing that I think is the coolest. Now,
they're not tiered boards, though, are
they?
They're
not tiered. That's the problem. So they are obviously very, very well made, proper flight cases, but when you open them up, they are just carpeted and flat.
Right.
Yeah. So then the idea is you would Velcro. They come with a roll of Velcro, but you would Velcro the underside of your pedals, and you'd have to have all your cables exposed.
Is it a board that lifts out?
It is.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So you can still do some drilling, and you can still like mount your power supply underneath and things like that. You can make it neat, but very much it is a do-it-yourself.
So it's a bit more useful, a bit more usable than like. I mean, I really like the Diago stuff.
Uh-huh.
I think those boards are very, very cool, but they haven't really sort of caught up with like the current trend. I guess of convenience.
Well, that's which. Pedal Train have just absolutely dominated.
Just destroyed it.
But the price is still good on these. So if you're not too fussed about being tidy, then, you know, you can pick up if the equivalent size, I was checking from Pedal Train, for what Pedal Train do, their Novo 34, it might be Novo 32, I'm not sure, which is their second to largest board next to the Terra. The equivalent size of that board is £80 by Swan Flight, and it's £230
very different board,
Of course, yeah, exactly. You've got the ridiculously, you know, the lightweight aluminium tiered board from Pedal Train, which I still think I'm not going to get one of these Swan Flights because I still think
you still need the
Pedal Train
access tiering, to it. Yeah.
Yeah, just being tidy, everything like that is just for the long run of your board actually staying together and staying functional. I think Pedal Train are the better choice, but to be able to get something that would cost you 230 quid quid.
And I mean, if you're in the sort of band that, you know, maybe only needs, you know, a handful of pedals and you're out on the road
smaller
all the
boards
time,
are so cheap.
Yeah.
Like it was something like the price of, do you remember those Stag
I've had a couple
of
those.
UPCs. Yeah. I mean, as you've said a lot of times, not fit for purpose.
No. Not at all.
Well, I mean, there's a reason that I've had a couple of them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But my one broke. I think I bought it broken, and it only got worse from there.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
But you can get one of the for the same similar size to the sort of size. I know there are a few sizes in the Stag ones, but they're all roughly the same sort of thing. You know, you can get, I don't know, 5 to 8 pedals. On those boards. That sort of size by Swan Flight is the same price for something in a flight case.
I mean, that's mad.
So yeah, so definitely something to take advantage of at the moment. And that's kind of me. I think that's more or less what I've been doing. Checking out Hagstrom guitars.
Oh yeah, why?
My guitarist is getting an endorsement.
Of course. Hey. How many times have you had this conversation in the last 12 months?
Have we? What, about different brands?
Yeah.
It was Burns for a while. Yeah. It
didn't pan out.
Why didn't he pay for his guitars like everyone else does?
He just wants free ones.
If you're left-handed, there's not a huge amount of choice, is there?
No, exactly.
You can get a Mexican standard Telecaster.
You can, indeed.
But Hagstrom actually do loads of left-handed stuff.
Yeah.
Those Swedes, they
love it.
They love it. So yeah, so we've been checking out the Hagstrom Swede, which I've never checked out. I've never looked at Hagstrom until he brought it up, and then
they first came on my radar when I was like really big into Nirvana back in the day. And you are in fact showing us
the Pat Smear signature.
That's the reason that I know about them is Pat Smear.
Right.
But
yeah.
I don't. My interest in them has never really gone any further than that, other than they're kind of. Pat Smear played them in Nirvana and Foo Fighters, and they do a lot of kind of cool stuff.
Yeah,
I've never really looked into it.
So they're the Hagstrom range. This actually fits quite well into this new thing we were going to do, which we haven't
brand
introduced
of the week.
But yeah, we're going to do Brand of the Week. So I'll talk a little bit about Hagstrom. So they do like a mass friendly stuff. A Swedish company that originated being an accordion factory.
Okay, okay.
And I think that defined. Now, if we were doing Brand of the Week, I'd have done more reading on this. But from what I understand, that really defined their early guitars, as in a lot of them had accordion controls on them. They were reusing a lot of the parts, the buttons and things like that.
Weird.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So they were totally bonkers guitars. But you know, since then, the company bit the dust. But very much the company shut down, the doors closed, and the factory was left as it was. So when it was bought years later, whilst it's now made in China, all the machinery that was there in the Sweden factory was actually transported over to China. So
whilst it's
Chinese built, they're still using the same machinery. Now they have come up with a lot of new models, but they're really good. So they do some interesting stuff. They do a lot of hollow bodies. They do sort of big jazz box guitars, and they do 335 styles. They do this great series called, I think, Retro Vibe or
Retroscape,
yeah. Which are really interesting, weird, kooky guitars.
Oh yeah, so like, they're new designs, but they look kind of 60s.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of
like Moss Wrights or
weird
Burns.
Sort of like Woolworths guitars.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, exactly. So they're sort of like single coils. They come to two or three single coils with more controls than you can shake a stick at, in a sort of almost a Hofner bass style, like
multi-switch
style control. Really interesting stuff. And of course they do the Swede as well, which is what I was...
The Viking's the one.
The Viking's cool, yeah. The Viking's kind of a sort of SG style, style guitar. Not quite.
They just look mean.
Somewhere between a Gibson SG and a Yamaha SG, I think.
The Viking?
The Viking,
The Viking's the 335.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, what am I thinking of? More the Pat Smear body shape.
The Pat Smear is kind of somewhere between.
No, but there is also a
regular range.
But I'm not sure what that is in that case. But the Swede is the one that was really interesting, which is kind of like a single cut Les Paul style, but it's just it's really smart. It's got a cool high end retro look to it that a lot of the... What are you looking at?
I was looking at the Ultra Swede, which is like
a bit weird, a bit
Les
modern.
Paul. Yeah, it's like a VRS.
A lot of them are sort of Les Paul-y.
They've completely changed their range since I looked, because they did. Yeah. They used to do a lot more of the guitars that looked like the Pat Smear.
That's right. Yeah, they did. They have changed to being more of a Gibson line of things. So they do some really... I really like the 335 style guitars.
Yeah, the Vikings.
Cool. Those are the Vikings. Yeah.
I used to get asked about those quite a lot when I was working.
They've got a really interesting tailpiece.
Yes. Yeah.
They're really cool. And yeah, the Swede is kind of their Les Paul, but with more of a horn on it, I guess, more of a lower horn. But
right.
Really good looking guitars.
They do this, the Northern Swede as well. Have you seen this?
I haven't, no.
The Northern Swede is Northern. Not Northern.
Northern,
yeah. Which are built in Europe, apparently. Presumably built in Sweden. So I guess this is kind of like their...
Custom shop.
I don't know a huge amount about them. I mean, I really love the Pat Smear. I think that's a great guitar.
I love the headstocks on them across the board. And they do things like, on models like their Swede, they've got... I mean, it's kind of a Les Paul in that it's got, you know, two humbuckers, four controls, a three-way pickup selector. But then it also has... a three-way tone selector.
Okay, well, like a Gretsch then, kind of like a...
I guess so, yeah.
Full tone, half tone.
Yeah, exactly like that. Yeah, which is...
Very good. I was wondering if you were going to sneak that in. When you said full tone, half tone, I was like, be funny if you said total eclipse, and then you did. Always delivering. Well, that was kind of a soft launch into our brand of the week.
Yeah,
I think we'll come back to Hegstrom when we know a little bit more. But
yeah, definitely.
I think we're going to make it a bit of a regular,
really cool
regular
and really affordable guitars. I just think, like, I mean, sometimes on the group, I think there's a little bit discussion about.
This is facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum.
There's quite a few people who I think buy a lot of guitars and often maybe don't spend a lot on them. Sort of, you know, get through loads of guitars, buy cheap guitars to try out cool, interesting new things, which is fine and a cool thing to do. I think Hagstrom are probably a good brand to look at for that sort of thing, just because you get a high level of quality with them. And I think other companies, maybe companies like Court and Vintage, people like that, I'm not so sure. Like, they do cool copies. I've just never been convinced that they actually... That, like, those companies are making stuff with cheap materials in order to... you know, hit profit margins.
Well, they also don't really have to try because they're in so many guitar shops, you know, everywhere stocks vintage.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff is kind of okay, some of it's not great. Whereas someone like Hagstrom, they've actually got to try a bit more because they're a bit of an underdog brand. Yeah. And so, yeah, it probably is some really nice stuff for not a huge amount of money. So
yeah, absolutely.
So this week, I have been playing around with some new pedals that came in. Primarily the Johnny Rocker Dyno range.
Oh, is that the one we periscoped last week?
Yeah, we periscoped us opening it last week. Periscope.com/guitar nerds or just at guitar nerds on Periscope. It's cool. I plugged it in yesterday. It's very much like Dynacomp, but with some, hence the name, Dyno range, but with a bit of variety to it because you've got three controls, and you've also got like a little micro switch, which I couldn't actually work out what it did.
It was probably like a high pass filter.
It's changing the tone or something. Yeah, I don't really know. I need to. I didn't get the manual. Didn't get the manual out. I need to do that. But yeah, if you're looking for a compressor that goes from super subtle and transparent right round to real kind of clicky sounding, the Dyno range is cool. Into it a lot, and it's got a picture of a dinosaur on it. Oh. So you know. Winner.
That is
what
a winner.
Sort of dinosaur?
I remember
sort of a cartoon T-Rex.
I remember two quick additional things actually that I should mention. I got to play the new Boss Bass Chorus this week.
Oh yeah, how's it sound?
Yeah, it sounds brilliant. I think it's like easily better than at least the same as the MXR Bass Compressor, which is obviously what it's going
Wait,
after.
Wait, Bass Chorus?
Bass Compressor.
You said Bass Chorus.
Oh, did I say chorus?
Yeah.
I meant compressor.
I thought there was a new pedal that we
did. Yeah, I suddenly thought like Joe said something.
No.
Joe's done a Branton.
The bass compressor, the Boss bass compressor.
Okay.
Right. It's really, really good.
Okay.
I think it's easily going to be the best bass compressor on the market.
So is your CS3 finally going to...
I think so.
Really?
I think
how many have you got?
Out, what?
CS3. You just got the one?
I've just got one.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So it's finally going to...
it's going to go.
Wow.
Annoyingly, I just bought a new
BCS3
compressor.
Or something.
Oh, yeah. I don't, no, BC3X.
Okay.
Part of the
X series. Right, okay.
Because it's got the MDP technology.
Right, okay.
Multiband compressor in that.
Yes.
But yeah, I think it's, my CS3 is going to go.
It's gone.
Annoyingly, I just bought a new compressor, but the Boss one's better than that as well.
Nice.
So
always the way.
It's going to go.
What was your other bit of news?
Oh, I've forgotten.
Good. Yeah. Newsworthy.
Yeah, carry on.
Good stuff. Well, because it's been so NAMM heavy the last few weeks.
No, it's gone again. Carry on.
You're great at this.
Because it's been so NAMM heavy the last couple of weeks, we haven't really got around to doing any questions. So I thought we would do a little questions special, pulling in questions from facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, the Guitar Nerds group, which has swelled to nearly 2,000 members. Unbelievable. Crazy.
Swollen.
It is swollen indeed.
It's bonkers, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I mean, I think we were kidding ourselves if all of that traffic has come because of this or because people have just seen a forum called Guitar Nerds.
I remembered.
Go on.
I remembered. On the Hagstrom, I was looking for video demos of it.
Yeah.
And the only ones I could find were on a channel called The Swedish Guitar Nerd.
Oh, nice.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
and honestly, probably the worst video demos I have ever seen.
Well, if anyone from Hagstrom is listening, please send us some demo samples and we'll do some slightly nicer videos. We'll give them to Matt Knight to give them a look over. Anyway, so it's question spectacular this week. Loads of questions pulled from the Facebook group. Let's kick off with Jamie, who says, best volume boost. Tried a few, but need something that boosts volume of a relatively high gain tone. Due to the gain, most of the boosts I've tried have been a gain boost of the boost at the end of my chain. J Cross.
This question comes around every now and again, and
we always say the same thing.
Always say the same thing, and I would love for there to be another option, but I still think the best way to do this is you need to take a step back and think about what you're doing in a slightly different way. So rather than try and boost your standard signal, what you want to do is you want to have your standard signal as... so, like, the way that you play when you're playing full bore is have that as your boosted signal. And then just wind everything back a little bit and have that as your stand. Like, it's easier to take volume away than to add volume in. And the best way that we've found to do that is to get something like like the Boss GE7. GE7, the 7-band EQ, and pretty much all of the, pretty much any EQ pedal will have a as well as having the 7-band EQ, it will have like a master volume on the far side.
It has a 20 decibel boosting.
Yeah,
cut.
And 15. What you want.
15.
Yeah. And what you want to do is, I think the best way to do this is actually just wind that back a little bit, just a hair. Just have that back, you know, just down a couple of decibels, and then turn that, have that on all the time, so your signal is slightly cut back. And then when you want to bring in your, you know, your boosted signal, turn that pedal off, and that will bring your full signal through, which will give you a clean boost. I mean, it isn't a clean boost, it's just going back to the normal volume, but you can't, there's not really any such thing as a clean boost. No. Because you're always going to add a bit of gain. Now, if
you can do it less, because I think the problem with that is it's a bit of a tone sucker when you constrict your pedal with that. And I do agree with you, that's the best way of boosting volume in its cleanest form.
Yeah.
But I kind of think you just need to suck eggs a little bit and accept that it's going to boost your gain a little bit. Go for something that is very clean, like a TC Spark booster.
I don't think a TC Spark boost is that clean. I would say if you want to go that way and you do want to like kick in, you know, a proper boost, you need to go for something that's not 9 volt, that runs at 18 volt, something like the Pigtronics Class A boost. I think will give
that run at 18.
Yeah, it can run anywhere between 9 and 18. Something like the Pigtronics Class A boost, or I think a couple of the EP boost, who makes those?
Exotic.
I think a couple of the exotic pedals can run at 18 volts as well.
What about the MXR Microamp Plus? The Plus has tonal controls as well, so you can clean it up a little bit.
Here's one for you. Effects loop. GE7 in the effects loop. So you run your regular board in the front into the amp, and then you just run a GE7 in the effects loop.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's not going into the front end of the amp. You're not slamming the front end with any more volume and driving the front end any harder. Have a boost in the effects loop to just give you more volume going into the power amp.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, I don't see why that wouldn't work.
Yeah.
I don't know. We need to speak to Matt Knight.
Do you know what? Do you know what's a cool alternative to the GE7?
Go on.
Is the sound control? Have you seen that they've done a completely like a knobless EQ, so it's an EQ that you control with little buttons, so you can't ever knock it, so that and you save
what?
you can save, you preset in EQs, and it shows you them in lights on the front of it,
right? Okay.
I don't know how many bands it is, but it means so you can never knock it.
Okay.
So your EQs are
well
preset.
At least you've tried it.
Yeah.
Yes, you're on form.
But I loved the idea. I thought that was great because, like, you know, I mean, I'm already short a couple of the little tops to my GE7B.
Yeah, they are pretty susceptible to coming off, those little the little EQ slider gloves that they pop on there. Talking of knobs that you can't knock, did you see the someone posted in the Facebook group the skull pedal that the top of the skull comes up?
Was it me?
I didn't realise you
posted it. Cheers, Geese. Thanks for that. Unbelievable.
I didn't realise that you posted it.
Yes, it was me. It
what
was me
is that
posted
pedal?
It. I can't remember the name of the brand, but they do 3 or 4 different variants. And yeah, there are alien heads and skulls and demon heads.
Yes. This sounds rubbish.
The demon head. So have you seen these,
no.
Jay? Right. So what they are is the skull is a... I think it's a delay.
Okay.
Well, it's the alien head that's a delay, but essentially it is an iron-looking skull alien head.
Yeah.
And you have to flip up the top of the head. It sort of opens like a Star Trek.
It looks like a bit... do you remember Mad Max? Not Mad Max. Mighty Max toys.
Yeah, okay.
It's a bit like those. So that the top of the head opens, and that's where the controls are. So you can select those, and then you shut...
Yeah.
The top of the head, and that's how the pedal works. And it's the bottom of its mouth is a completely crushing thing that goes in as the
on switch. Yeah.
I mean, but the question is why you'd want to hide your controls on a delay pedal. Like, you actually need to manipulate those pretty real time. And if you've got a 2-tiered pedal board, you're not going to be able to open the top.
You just have it on the top tier.
You'd have to have it on the top
also,
tier.
Also, surely you want, for something like that, you want the features facing outwards to your mates. in the audience.
Oh, yeah, true. But it's looking at you, which is cool. They also do a sort of demon head drive where the horns on the devil are the rotary controls.
Yes.
You turn the horns.
This sounds so pedalboard friendly.
I know,
like,
they
how,
are.
Like, you're not going to get that into a Diago,
They're quite reasonably sized pedals, though. I mean, they're quite small.
They're clearly for kids who are like, I just want one drive pedal, or I needed one delay pedal. That looks cool. They're not thinking about
getting
like
that and a BC Rich Warlock.
Yeah, they're not thinking about pedalboard ergonomics. As long as it fits in the pocket on a coffin case, we're on top of it.
The website actually makes them look really high end, sort of thing. They've gone for a really smart, swaggy website.
Okay.
And then they.
How
just
much have, are they?
I didn't check. I don't think they were cheap, though.
I think they're about
100, 150 quid.
Right, okay. Yeah.
But if you're going to get one pedal, might as well make it an alien head.
Blimey.
Or a demon. So, Jamie, we're thinking there's a few solutions. I personally think if you want to go, the cleanest route would be to put a very clean boost in the effects loop, if you've got one. If not, then definitely putting it at the end of the chain is your best option. And again, go clean. Or do it, like Jay says, do the reverse. Start off, quieter. Have it quieter when it's on. And then, you know, hit it to make it go loud. Paul says, the Jackson Telly style guitar from Nam, is there anything else of the same style for less than £500 anywhere? So we're talking two humbucker Telly, I believe. Any ideas?
Well, there are a few things that you can do for sort of sub 500 quid if you're looking for a modern Telecaster, which I think is really cool. I'm really into these. I love Telecasters being taken into a modern format. I think they work really well. They managed to make kind of heavy metal guitars look less cheesy to me, and I think they suffer from that a little bit. A few brands that you can do it with. First of all, probably the cheapest you can do it with is Squire, with the Jim Root signature Telecaster, which is great. So you're getting, it's not EMGs in the Jim Root, and it is a passive instrument. They're Squire's own humbuckers, but they're kind of those poleless humbuckers, you know, designed to
just
look
like
a bit
plastic cover rather than.
So they look really cool, and you know, they're bound and they're white, and it's got a matte black scratch plate. They're cool looking.
They're not bound.
Are they not bound?
They're not bound, no, they're not.
Oh, okay.
They cool still looking, look good, though. Bound.
Cool looking guitar. The good thing about those is the neck is pretty similar to the one that's actually on the on the full signature model. I really like those.
I really like those, and for less than 350 quid, I think that's really cool. There are some more swaggy options by
John
Squire.
5.
Yeah, you know what we're thinking. Yeah, the John 5, which is a Aztec gold. I can't remember the gold.
Yeah, it's Aztec gold.
Is there not a black one as well? There used to be a black one.
There is a black triple humbucking one.
Frost gold, not Aztec gold. I think it's frost gold.
And that's with a gold anodized plate.
Yes.
Or it might be gold mirror on the
bling. Super bling.
Super bling with a matching headstock and gold hardware. I mean, you can't get more bling than that. But if you're into bling, and I do actually think it looks quite tasteful. Like, it a bit. Like, it's just about tasteful. So those are good cheap options. Then sort of mid-range, you come into the brand that really, to be honest, Jackson are copycatting to release a modern-looking Tele. Well, I guess Jackson are owned by Fender, so they kind of own the Tele, so I guess they're not copycatting. But a sort of Telecaster in a modern format, I think, is really owned by ESP. I think they're kind
Definitely.
Of the company that have really put that to the forefront. So I am terrible with ESP.
TE-212 is the model I think you're thinking of.
I'm not actually thinking of the, is that the classic one, though?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Because they also do a range of like more modern ones that in plain white and black scratch plate finishes.
They just launched some new ones, in fact. The one at NAMM, I can't remember the names of them, but I'm not even sure on price point yet, but I think they'll fall sub 500 quid.
Yeah, well, this is it. They do everything in an LTD, or most things in an LTD model. Actually, for what it's worth, we can't really use this for plugs, but a shop that I know very well is doing a sale on old ESP stock, and I am aware that there are some of these. All right, it's not quite a plug. It's fine. So that's an option. Also, other places that I've seen it done recently is I saw this band called Lost in the Riots, and their guitarist has a Warmoth double humbucking Telly. And of course, I know Warmoth are technically the answer to any question.
Because
you can make anything from them.
Also, not going to be sub 500 quid.
Oh, I guess no. Yeah, sub 500. Well, forget that one then.
Yeah. Yeah. Jay, any more that you you think could throw into the mix?
Not that I can think of that Joe hasn't mentioned. I would throw my weight behind the TE212, LTD TE212. I think that's a very, very cool guitar. They come in a few different finishes and are like £300.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Because I think they did an ST212 as well, which is like a Strat style. Yeah. But I mean, these were more sort of classic. You know, they weren't EMG or humbuckers. No. They were single cores, if I remember correctly.
On the second-hand market, you could probably pick up one of the Modern Player tellies that are discontinued now.
Yeah, the Modern Player is a fairly good shell.
Fender Modern Player Telecaster.
So the Fender Modern Player stuff, they did two models of Telecaster. They did the Tele Plus and the Tele Deluxe, I think it is. But they did one that was... one of them was... very, very odd. Oh, the thin line and the plus. The thin line was two P90s, which was quite cool.
That was a cool looking guitar.
It was a great guitar. I can't believe they've sort of all but got rid of this series.
They were just trying things out, weren't they? Modern Player range, we always said it was a bit weird, you know? Yeah.
It was for experimenting, just seeing what. But
they've more or less is gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other one, the plus, was a humbucker in the bridge, a Tele pickup in the neck, and then a Strat pickup in the middle.
Yeah.
With a little dip switch that you could you could coil tap.
It was kind of your ultimate all rounder.
Coil splitter. Yeah, really weird. I wasn't a huge fan of them.
No.
I think they were a little lackluster.
Well, I think we'd all agree that Teles are kind of perfect as they are. So.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
But if you're looking for a humbucker Tele, you're not looking for the standard Tele layout. So,
I'll tell you the other thing to go for, which probably is a little over £500, but I think probably the best thing of that style is the Fender FMT.
Yeah, I did think about those.
They're quite a lot over £500.
Yeah. I don't know if they are quite a lot. I think they might be £600 or £650 or so. But they are built in
Korea. One of the only guitars Fender makes in Korea.
Or they might be Indonesian, actually. I think they're Indonesian because... I can't remember. They're built in the same factory as the Jim Adkins Tele.
Which is P90s, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. And the reason that they're built there is because it's the only place that Fender could do through neck. And that is a great guitar. Two humbuckers that you can coil split. And they are excellent guitars. Not visually what I'm into at all. They're very PRS-like.
They did what was the... Burled ash or something, or burled maple top.
Sported maple.
That was really nice. That was the most subtle because the others are flame top.
Sported, yeah. Weird.
The others are flame top though, and they're like cherry red or amber. Yeah. This was the most natural looking of all of them.
Do you remember on those pedal board rundown things that we did that we shot with Boss? One, the guy from Cleft had one of those Korean.
I'm not sure that one's gone up yet.
It definitely has.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I saw it the other day.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're great guitars. And again, loads of options. Two humbuckers, two single coils.
Super versatile.
Didn't it give you options for how they were wired as well?
Don't think so. If I remember correctly, it's only two control. I think it was just volume and tone. And the volume, tone, and three-way selector.
And the tone was a coil split. Yeah.
Well, those Korean FMTs also, if you can grab an early one secondhand, which is the same one that the fella from Cleft talks about in his rundown, is they come with Seymour Duncan pearly gates.
Yes.
Are they pearly gates?
Yeah.
Are they? Okay. Right,
which
well.
Which is bonkers.
They're really high
bonkers
end.
Bonkers for a Korean.
Yeah.
Completely. Yeah, yeah. Tele. Did they switch to a Duncan design or something?
I think later on they sort of brought them more in line with the price of the guitar.
I might look out for one of those. They're actually not bad guitars. Now that we're doing loads of demos, I kind of need something that's actually a bit versatile and having a single pickup P90 Les Paul Junior.
Yeah, we should try and not use Matt's pink Les Paul in every video.
I think we should only use that. It's a great guitar.
It is a great guitar.
But it'd be good to have a guitar that's got single coils and a humbuckers. So
I don't know why we don't bring your Junior along.
Well,
I love your Junior.
There's some problems with the Junior. I was playing some guitar yesterday, and the Junior, because of the way the Junior's wired at the moment, the tone doesn't work. The tone doesn't work.
The tone had it disconnected.
The tone is not connected. The volume is also disconnected, except for it's a push-pull, where if you pull it out, the guitar cuts off. But years of neglect and I think a very bad wiring job in the first place have meant that when you pull the volume pot out to mute the guitar, it just goes...
That sounds great. You should put that into a delay pedal.
It sounds terrible. So there's some work that needs to be done. I've noticed like some other weird things about how it's set up. So yeah, lots of work to do on the Junior before we can use it. Well, it's so much so, in fact, that I got the Aria out yesterday, the Mosrite copy.
Wow, your pink Mosrite copy.
It actually doesn't sound bad. The neck pickup is very sweet indeed.
Jay, I've been thinking, half the people in Guitar Nerds own pink guitars.
Yeah.
It's down to you and me to sort this out.
You used to have a kind of pink bass.
And I got it changed to a gorgeous chocolate two-tone sunburst.
Indeed.
I should get something else refinished in pink.
Yes.
And then we can have all the guitar demos on a pink Les Paul and all the bass demos on a pink.
Yes.
Maybe, when I get my offset telly,
yeah,
shall I get it refinned in some sort of...
Shell pink.
No,
hot
not
pink.
Hot pink.
No,
shell pink all the definitely way. Shell
see
pink.
See if anyone can see. I'll see if I can get hold of one of the actual that, Mark Hoppus signature.
Yes.
Pink. What was that?
They were really rare in pink.
Yeah, what was it called? It
shell pink.
No, it was not shell pink.
It was 100% shell pink.
No, the colour, the pink that he has.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
I think it's not lipstick pink, maybe? Something like that.
Anyway, Gavin says, what's the best of the Lunchbox amps? Now, considering the Orange Tiny Terror has recently been discontinued, I thought this was quite a pertinent question. Joe Branton.
Oh, man, I need to think about that because there are so many. I've got a lot of time for Lunchbox amps. I mean, recently, obviously, we had Gear of the Year and I was really, really into and fighting the corner for the new PV, the Classic 20.
Yep.
I don't think there's a better looking sort of Lunchbox amp out there. A tweed Lunchbox amp that's all valve, 20 watts, so completely giggable, USB, has a cab sim on it, so you can record directly with it. I just, you cannot get more versatile than that. So as much as I really, I guess, do the new Yamaha heads count?
Yeah, they do. What? THR 1000?
No, not the THRs. The ones that are completely fine.
Those ones,
They're out and rocking.
Not record.
The ones that you could buy. I don't know if it was biamping, was it? But you could run two channels.
They had two of the same channel in them. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't think
it's quite a Lunchbox though. It's kind of a 2U.
And it's 100 watts as well.
Yeah.
So
no, maybe it doesn't count.
So I think things that are up for consideration, definitely the PV Classic 20. The small 5150 head.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant. Victory Kraken, which
EVH
we talked about a lot.
EVH have also released their small one.
Yep. So the PV one is the 6505. The EVH is the 5150.
Yeah. The Orange OR15.
I wouldn't say that's Lunchbox.
It definitely is.
It's not. It's not small enough.
I think it is.
No.
Dude, it is. It's definitely Lunchbox.
They're small.
But it's also not loud enough to properly gig.
You think that 30 watts is, and you think that Classic
15.
20 is, and the 15 is not?
I think that the OR15 is surprisingly quiet for Orange.
It's the same, it's at least as loud as a Tiny Terror.
Okay.
I think, and I think a lot better. A lot better. I love that OR15. I think that's a great amp.
Some
of the Mark Bass ones. Mark Bass.
DV Mark.
The Mesa Boogie, actually. Was what I was
sure.
They're too much money. They can't.
They're still Mark. They're
still
Lunchbox.
I just think the whole premise of a Lunchbox amp is that it's like this, you know, you can transport it, it's giggable, it's affordable for touring musicians. I think that's all sort of part and parcel. And I just think Mesa Boogie just miss the mark.
Not at all. They were super popular. Like, you know, the I think the best in terms of value and like versatility of sound, you know, because the first one they brought up was the Transatlantic, the 15 and the 30.
Yeah,
you know, the Transatlantic 30 is bigger than the OR15. You know, that was a big head.
Yeah.
So you've got the Transatlantic, then they brought out the Express, the 15 and the 25 and the 50, and they also had recently brought out the Mark 525.
Yeah.
Mark 525.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
But I think the best of all of them was the Mini Rec.
Oh, Mini Rex sounded so good, but yeah. They are a lot of money.
They were 1,100 quid or £1,000.
They'd never win for me because of their price tag. But yeah, I will concede that, yeah, you're right. They are really, really good.
Yeah.
So we haven't said that any of the Hughes and Kettner stuff, who are, if anything, maybe predecessors to Orange at making lunchbox apps.
I mean, yeah, Tube Meisters. I mean, they weren't before the Tiny Terrors. Tiny Terror definitely before.
Yeah, Tiny Terror was first, yeah.
But
you know, Hughes and Kettner claim that they are the first.
Well, they
in
might have done
all their literature,
something else.
I was doing some reading on them recently.
Because they've just revamped the Tube Meister range, haven't they? There's a couple of new Tube Meister models out.
They brought out some really big ones.
Yeah.
But I think I was reading about them, and they, like, in all their stuff, they're like, banging on about being the first people to do a lunchbox amp, which is the only reason I cited it. Be interesting to know who
was first.
I don't
know if that's true.
There.
Yeah. So I think it all depends on what you're after, what you want out of it. Like, definitely if you're doing like blues and like classic rock stuff, Classic 20 is definitely up for consideration.
Well, not just that, surely like on versatility, I think that
the Classic 20 should be there. But I mean, if you're in a death metal band, the Classic 20 is probably not going to do it. Whereas, you know, something like the EVH head would be in with a better shout.
But the EVH head's probably a better all-rounder, actually.
Well, but and also if you've got more money, like I think the Transatlantic and, you know, things like the Mini-Rec can't really be beaten. The Mini-Rec in particular is stunning.
The Mini-Rec was so good.
And also,
so good.
You know, they're not, yes, they are a lot of money, but they're not, some of them are not unreachable. So something like the Transatlantic 15, what were they, like a grand?
The 15, I think, was 899 or 999.
Yeah.
And the 30, the big one, which I always thought was in a bit of a weird position because it wasn't huge, it wasn't that much more versatile than the 15. I think it maybe had a reverb tank in it, which was one of the reasons. But they were like 1,600 quid, you know. And when you compare it to the Mini Rec, which I think was, I mean, the Mini Rec was perfect because it was, it had everything that you wanted it to. You, like, the reason that everyone in all those big bands were playing, everyone was playing a dual rec, is that they were, they sounded amazing. Loads of headroom, so the cleans sound great. The drives are incredible, super versatile. But, like, who needs 100 watts for most bands don't need 100 watts. The Mini Rec came in at 25 watts, switchable down to 5 watts, two channels, both channels, each channel had two voicings. They were amazing, absolutely amazing. I think they were the best lunchbox. I think that is the answer to the question for me.
Fair enough.
Yes, they're £1,000, but like, so is your guitar, probably.
Yeah, I know, but if I was going to spend £1,000, I'd buy something that, you know, didn't look like a lunchbox, you know.
But like, what would you buy then?
Well, I just think the idea, the DSL people 50. Who are buying lunchbox amps are people who aren't driving to gigs, you know. And so the very idea of that means that you're probably not gigging professionally.
Not if you're...
And so I just think lunchbox amp that's £1,000 is just daft.
But what if you're doing function gigs where you're going to be on a tiny stage at the back of a pub, you've probably also got to fit a couple of PA speakers in your car.
I think a function band's an interesting thing to start, because you're saying that because the mess is so versatile.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know the last time I went to a function gig and saw a guy changing presets from song to song. You just get a good general rock sound.
Well, yeah, but then the Boogie is really good for that.
It's really for a lot of money, though.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, you know, most people I know who do function stuff, that's not their only band. They do the functions for money, and then they do a fun originals band on the side. So something like a Transatlantic or a Mini Rec is great because, you know, you could go and set up a great sound for your functions gig, and then you go and do your 80s hair metal style band for fun on the side.
Yeah. I wish we'd actually, between us, had more hands-on experience with the Victory Kraken.
Yes.
Just because I feel like that could actually be a real contender here.
I've
on
never
paper, it's a real contender. Well, none of us have. Like, we kind of fought it through the Gear of the Year without, you know, just on paper. And I think
Matt has had a lot of time.
Oh, Matt
had
loads of time with it.
And I've listened to a load of demos, and I've heard one live, actually, and it did sound really good. So I think that's definitely up there, but again, there's no real answer to this question.
No,
despite us talking around it for 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the real one, I guess, that we haven't mentioned is the Fender Blues Junior head.
Wait. Mate, honestly, what are they doing?
What are they doing? Why isn't that a thing?
Because every time Fender release a head, it doesn't sell any units at all.
I bet if they did a Blues Junior head, they would sell.
I don't think they would.
Nah, you're probably right.
Will says, One Spot Pro, CS7, or MXR ISO Brick, or something else.
Well, the MXR ISO Brick is probably one of the best things on the market at the moment. So easily that said, I'm really impressed with the One Spot, like, even for considering I wouldn't have thought much of the brand, because they, not because they're bad, they're very good, but what they do that's very good is you can buy a 9 volt power supply with the daisy chains relatively quietly for £30.
That's, you know, I'm running my board on it, it sounds great.
Yeah, I tell you what, Visual Sounds do some very, very cool pedals.
No longer called Visual Sound.
Oh no, what are they called now?
True Tone.
Okay, yeah, they do some very, very cool pedals. And I actually think, so I've not seen
the H2O, I'm really into that.
Yes, yeah,
that's a cool
they do some very cool stuff, and I've not actually seen the CS7. I saw it got brought up in the group a little while ago, and they look very, very cool. So they've got 7, I think, because it's still called the CS7, isn't it? I think they've got 7 outputs, which are all in varying voltages and varying,
so I think it's 6 9s and 112, isn't it, and they're all isolated,
right? Okay. And you know, so that seems really cool, but for me, the I mean, if it's down to me, I probably would have had the MXR ISO Brick win Gear of the Year last year.
It did really well,
and I just thought that was just a brilliant power supply that came out at exactly the right time. Well, I mean, it would have come out at the right time had it come out at NAMM last year when they announced it, instead of waiting until like August for them to actually arrive. But that's by the by. I think they came out at the right time. You know, a lot of outputs with a lot of milliamp capabilities. I just think that, and it's MXR. It will never. I mean, I don't know. I've never had any issues with any of my Visual Sound stuff, but MXR pedals never ever break.
That is true. However, not a naysayer on MXR at all, but we all agreed earlier that Pedal Train are dominating the pedal market at the moment. Pedal Train make an adaption kit for a power supply to go on the underside of their boards, and the brand that Pedal Train choose to do that are Voodoo Labs.
Yes.
Now, if the biggest pedal board manufacturer are choosing one brand to make a rack kit for, that, you know, they've done their research, and I think Voodoo Labs do make the best power supplies out there. So I would say, like, a Pedal Power 2 or a 4x4.
I don't think that they're as versatile as the ISO Brick. You know, the 4x4 maybe, but the Pedal Power 2 has only got 7 outputs, I think, whereas the ISO Brick has got 12, I think, and the ISO Brick doesn't have as many outputs that will power, for example, enough Strymon pedals. You know, for
the Voodoo Labs.
The Voodoo Labs won't have. The Voodoo Labs Pedal Power 2 doesn't have. You know, whereas the ISO Brick has got, I think you can power 4 Strymon pedals alongside, you know, 8 or 9 Boss or MXR pedals. Whereas the Pedal Power 2, I think you can only power 1 or 2 Strymon pedals with it. And I don't think that's very 2016.
Yeah. Two words for you: Zuma, Ouya. The two new Strymon power supplies.
This looks exciting.
Of course,
are going to destroy everything.
Well, they're going to be a lot of money, though,
aren't
they?
They're going to be £500 for power supply.
No, they won't. They won't.
There'll be a lot of money.
The little one, I think, is. I mean, I don't actually.
The little one's
no
pointless.
Idea.
The little one is pointless.
No, it's not, because it's modular. So if you've got, for me, someone like me, I've got like quite a small pedal board. One of those will do my entire pedal board, and it's really small. And
don't you need the big one to plug it into?
No,
you not
can if you want to.
Right, okay.
So the whole thing's modular. So if you buy a Zuma, which is the big one, you can plug in multiple
Ouyas,
something like that. Or you can buy, you can do it the other way around. So if you've got a little, so what I would potentially do is buy a little one to power what I've got at the moment. But then if I, you know, I might get a bigger pedal board, might have some more stuff. I could either buy another one of those to double up, or I could buy one of the big ones.
Right, okay, yeah, and power it off of that. So you still only need one.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's very, very cool. And I think it's, I think that's a very, very neat way of doing it. I think they're going to be a lot of money, though.
Oh, it's going to be good, though.
Yeah, I bet they're going to be great.
It's going to be good. Let's do a couple more questions. This one's for you, Joe Branton. Squarely at you. Corey says, what's the difference between the Matt Freeman P-Bass and the Classic Vibe 70s P-Bass?
A chrome bridge cover.
Is that it?
No. There are a couple of differences. There are a couple. The 70s P-Bass has a sort of... well, it's not actually completely not year correct 50s style bridge cover.
Sweet.
Which didn't really happen in the 70s because everyone had taken off the Fender bridges and put Leo Quad Badass 2s on there, or Star bridges as they were known back then. Those things didn't really exist. But nonetheless, Fender have decided to shove one on there. So
sweet.
There is a completely 20 years out tailpiece on the P-Bass, and they've gone for this never happened in the 70s black block inlays on a maple neck on a P-Bass. Never happened.
Really?
Never a line on a P-Bass.
I guess the idea is that block inlays were a big thing in the 70s, so if we're going to make a 70s P-Bass, let's chuck it on there.
Were they just
happens.
On the jazz bass, is it?
Yes.
Were they?
Yeah, that's right. So that was weird. So the 70s P-Bass, totally not a 70s P-Bass, but nonetheless it's there. It's black scratch plate, maple neck with black block inlays and a 50s tailpiece. But it does look super cool. It's just trying to be a bit of a sort of a swaggy version of a...
That's the third time you've said swaggy.
Is it? Yeah.
You saying keep it a saying lot swaggy.
Yeah, yeah.
You can tell you work with young people.
Oh, I do. They use it all the time. Swage. That's the new word.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
I used to have a jumper in that colour, I think.
I do say that word a lot. And the Matt Freeman is just a bit more tasteful, I think, just slightly more understated. So it's a, you know, a maple neck with simple, you know, black dot inlays, and you can get it in white or black. So the black one is the one that I'm not sure.
I'm
not
sure.
It might well be. The Freeman again is another weird one, because the Freeman is based on his, I think we've spoken about this, is based on his 70s P-Bass.
Yeah.
But they've gone for like a 50s tint to the neck, and it's also 50s decal.
Yeah.
The Fender Precision Bass is written in a small font underneath.
Yeah,
the,
it's not
Fender
a 70s headstock.
It's probably not the original neck, then. He's probably at some point...
His one is, though.
Is it? Yeah. Okay, no, I was going to say, maybe at some point he's dropped it or broken it.
I saw a picture of his bass the other day.
It looks nothing like the ragged.
It literally looks like... I don't know. It looks like something you found under the sea.
Watch the interview with him where he talks about it, and the fact that the truss rod's broken in it.
Yeah.
And the strings are sort of halfway off the fretboard, but he still loves it.
And he can still play it really well.
Also, just one of the best bass players.
He's an interesting bass player.
He's a great bass player.
He's a good bass player. But, I do think his Squire, and we've said it loads, is the best value for money bass guitar probably... Best value for money you can spend. If you are going to start bass, get a Matt Freeman. Yeah. If you were looking for a backup bass, get a Matt Freeman P-Bass.
Why have you not got a Matt Freeman?
Because I own the 50s, and this is the biggest problem that Fender have, is the 50s reissue in their Mexican series is exactly the same as a Matt Freeman, only the 50s one is £720 and the Matt Freeman's 300 or 400 quid now. I think it's just gone up.
So you went for the more expensive one.
The Matt Freeman didn't exist at the time, and actually for what it's worth, the Matt Freeman has a better bridge.
I think that the Matt Freeman is the best, certainly the best P-Bass you can buy for until you get to an American standard.
Yeah, the best thing in the Squire catalogue, without a doubt.
Oh, like across the six strings and four strings. I think the best Squire SKU.
Definitely. Let's do a couple more really quick questions. Will says, what's your favourite pick guard / body colour combo? J Cross.
White body and black pick guard.
Joe Branton.
Matt Freeman, basically.
Black body.
So Olympic white.
Guard.
I should specify. Olympic white being the best of the white colours.
Vintage white's way better.
Disagree.
I'd go black with a torque guard, Mark Packham.
I'm going to say probably magenta metal flake with a mirror scratched.
No, that's
plate.
Not true. That's
it
not
is.
Actually what
it
you
is.
Think.
I would
that's
love
not
that.
What you think.
100%.
Yeah, you might look, there are loads of things that I'd love. It's not the one that you think's the best.
Yeah, it is.
There's
got to
be a combo that you see and you go, yes.
I do think that's the best.
That combo's never happened.
So, yeah, on my when I've made things on Warmoth and stuff, like put, you know, guitar builders and things like that. Like, if... So, a lot of the paint has come off my Sunset Orange Transparent P-Bass. Like, I reckon if it took another couple
the
of...
The name of that colour makes it sound so much better than it is.
No, it's great. Sunset Orange Transparent. It's brilliant. If, I mean, it's not going to happen now because I don't gig that often, but if it took another hefty knock, I feel like a massive just crack would open in the paint and it would just all come off. And if I ever had to get it refinished, I would go for, like, pinky purple metal flake, magenta metal flake, and I'd put a... mirror scratch plate on it.
If you would actually do that, I think me and the other boys would probably be willing to come in quarters on that just to see it happen.
Good. Well, that's good to know. We'll see. I've got a gig on the 11th of March, so try not to make any... I try not to knock my bass, but if I do, I know that it's going to be a good colour afterwards. One more last one. Laurie says, Boss ME80 or GT100? Joe Branton.
I mean, I'd go ME80 every time just because I like rotary controls. I don't like hopping through options and things like that. And the GT100 does an awful lot, and I do think it's a very serious contender to be a solution for people who don't like pedal boards or want complicated controls. But I think for actually using something live without having to kind of sit down for hours before you gig, you know, meticulously working out everything, I just think for real time, you need to change things on the fly. I just don't think presets actually work when you gig. It's fine for bedroom guitarists, but as soon as you gig, they're just stupid. So anything with rotary controls, the ME80 is brilliant. The cradle controls on the ME80, so that you've got sort of a switch on the bottom half and the top half of your normal foot switch, I think it was a brilliant step forward. And you bought one, Mark Packham.
I did. I mean, I'm obviously going to say ME80 because, you know, there's loads of actual controls on there. I bought one. I think the it's got some of the MDP effects built in.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. That's
you're getting
it. The
so much
echo
value
and things like that, and the overtone.
Yeah.
And the other one.
Yeah. The drive adaptive distortion.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. There's just so much in there. Value for money wise is just unbelievable. And for someone who, like me, was like, oh, I'm curious about pedals, but I don't want to go down the route of getting a whole pedal board, obviously subsequently did, it was perfect because you get a kind of faux pedal board to mess around with. Something like the GT100, like you say, is great, but it's kind of almost like death by choice. Like, you've got too many options in there. Whereas on the ME80, you're actually kind of forced to get hands on and start... start attacking the controls and stuff. Plus, there's some wicked presets by me if you go onto Tone Central, Boss Tone Centrals, and you can download those. So
I really like the GT100, and I think that it was exactly what needed to come out at the time. And it was, it was sort of, an option for people who didn't want to spend £1,000 and get a TC Electronic G system. And wanted something a bit more user friendly, I guess, than like the Line 6 Floor Pod or the Pod X series.
XT.
Something a bit more user friendly than that. But likewise, I think I'd probably go with... Also, I like that you can do the four cable method with it, which is one of my favourite things to talk about. And I really liked how malleable everything was, all the effects. You can swap everything out and you can turn, put things in different places and see how different things sound. I think it's like it sounded great, but like you, I think if you want something that's giggable and just a bit more user friendly, for me, I just want to be able to plug in and play. And the GT100, whilst you can do that, I think it is designed as a session, not a session musician, I think it's for people who are doing functions, and I think you do need to spend a bit of time getting the sounds like dead in, and you need to get all your, and I think once you do that, it is amazing, but it's, I don't really have enough time for that, and I think the ME80 is a really, really great sort of halfway point between doing that and spending loads of money and buying loads of individual pedals.
Incidentally, Laurie, if you do choose to go with the GT100, you can get a Swan Flight flight case specifically for the GT100 for about £30 at the moment.
How much are Swan paying you for this free advertising?
Hey, it's never free. How much do you think... I've forgotten the name of that guitar brand we were talking about.
Hagstrom.
How much do you think Hagstrom are paying?
Well, indeed.
Well, nothing now. I've just forgot their name.
Yeah. There's some deals off the table. Unbelievable.
Off the Swan Flight table that Joe got that as made out for.
Yeah, did you just swap one of those chairs for this whole podcast, basically?
I did.
There would literally be no room left in your living room, I don't think, if you had one of those in there.
Oh, I wonder if we can get one for Matt to sit on whilst
for the videos.
They'll never be like, they look insane. Like, they look, the arms look so much higher up than the stool.
Like a throne.
It just looks like you'd be cocooned in sort of, they're orange. It's orange flight case material as well.
Oh, God, that sounds horrendous. Anyway, thanks for sticking with us for this questions special. We're going to do some more on the Patreon episode, where, depending on time, we're going to have questions from Ed about the best delay pedal ever, Rex about his 81 Tokai Strat, Adam about the Johnny Marr Jag, Ben about some Made in Mexico tellies, Ollie about fat distortion pedals, Harris about some multi effects under £200, and some more. There'll be more than
my
that.
My word, that's a lot of stuff to fit
in. I was going
to
say, depending on how... that's why I didn't... I don't want to spoil anyone's... don't want to promise anything we can't deliver. So, if you want to get that, head over to patreon.com/guitarnerds, where from as little as $5 a month, you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds every week. And for $10 a month, you become one of our executive producers, as these people have.
My good friend Andy McKinsey, John Dipto, and Eric Seary. My close pals Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Dale Resco. My tight brothers Jack Conroy, Will Clare, Chris Wilson, Scott O'Brien, and Matt Guy. My players Fletch, and Finn Thompson, Lyons. And then I got your man Mood Gravity, Colin Hanson, is what I say.
Worth mentioning that if you want to be on that prestigious list of executive producers, and we've limited it, as we said from the beginning, that we were going to limit it to 20 places. As you can hear, the list is getting quite long. There's only 4 places left by the time this recording goes up. So do head over to Patreon and grab your chance to get involved in the podcast every week.
Get involved.
Indeed. Thanks for sticking with us. We're going to do more on the Patreon episode. If you want to submit questions for a future episode, head over to facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, or you can send them on Twitter @guitar nerds. You can follow us on Periscope, where we occasionally do things, @guitar nerds, and on Instagram @guitar nerds. Good. Or you can head over to the site. Loads of stuff going up on there. As always, I'm doing a review of the Daddario patch cable set, which I'm writing at the moment. Joe Branson is probably doing some stuff.
Swan Flight.
Joe Branson is writing.
My favourite pickle.
That's your pseudonym. Joe Branson is doing a review of Swan Flight chairs. And Jay Cross, I don't know, he seems to have drifted away from the microphone.
I'm messing with the controls on your pedal board.
Good, thanks very much. So thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Farewell.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Swan Flight.